Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome to Satellite, Profile Theater's online supplementary magazine. Satellite is where you will come for interviews with artists, activists, and educators, and whoever else might give you a deeper understanding of the work that Profile puts on the stage. With Satellite, Profile is always looking for new avenues to deepen our audience's experience of the art, pulling back the curtain, providing insight, and giving our audience a glimpse of the act of creation. And now, welcome to Satellite.
Hello all, and welcome to Satellite, our Orange Sky Edition, Episode 2. This is Tamara Carroll, Profile's Director of Community Engagement, and today I am sitting down with some folks from our Community Profile Program, which is our bedrock community engagement program, and easily one of the most fun and gratifying parts of my role as Director of Community Engagement. The Community Profile Program is an affinity writing space that offers free writing workshops in addition to pretty much all of the benefits one receives with a Profile membership. So tickets to all the shows, tickets to special events, and opportunities to meet with and work with the season's featured writers. I believe at one point it was actually Chris Pena who suggested that this season's affinity group be a space for first-generation Americans and immigrants. So that extremely large umbrella is an identity shared by all of our participants in our current cohort. Throughout the two-year season, we schedule regular workshops with writers of all different backgrounds, playwrights, but also poets and memoirists and comedy writers, all who also identify as either first generation or an immigrant themselves. Today, our cohort attended a much-anticipated writing workshop with Chris Pena himself, and I asked them to stick around afterward and tell me a little bit about the workshop and also just their experience of being part of the cohort and getting to know these playwrights' work over a longer period of time. I'll give you fair warning, we are recording this episode in the basement of Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, and you get quite a lot of noise from upstairs. We've cut or filtered out where we could, but it may feel extra live, we'll say. We had a lot of fun, and I think surfaced some really lovely insights, and I hope that you enjoy. So I'm sitting here with three wonderful members of our Community Profile cohort, and I would love for them to introduce themselves and say, if y'all will say, you know, what sort of brought you to the Community Profile, this specific cohort that we have right now, and how long you've been involved. Do you want to start?
Sure. So my name is Agnieszka Fencher. I started, this is my first cohort, so second year. I accidentally actually found information about it on Profile's website when back home where I came from. I used to work as a writer for a newspaper, and I wrote for news for radio stations, which moving to United States, I stopped writing because it was harder to write in English. But after 20 years here, I decided that maybe it's time for me to try to write in English. And that was a perfect avenue for me to go back to writing.
And home was where?
Poland.
I know that, long but they don't yes. know that. I didn't want you to think that I'd forgotten.
No, I don't.
Okay, great.
Hello, my name is Winnie Hugh, and I started participating in Community Profile this past fall. I was interested because I wanted to explore a different aspect of my creativity. And the way I fit in the program is that my parents are from Taiwan, though I was born in the United States.
My name is Ajay Tarasa Tripathi. This is actually my second time doing this cohort. The first time was with a group of LGBTQIA plus writers that I participated in. And during that cohort, COVID happened. So a lot of our workshops became virtual workshops after that. But I had such a great experience meeting all of the wonderful mentors. When I heard they were doing it again for first generation or immigrant people, I thought, oh, well, I can apply again or just come again because I am of East Indian descent, born in Oregon here, but my dad is from Kanpur, India, and my mom is Mexican-American, so... Yeah.
So do you, Ajay, identify as first generation or second generation?
I always get confused. Is first generation it's technically both, right? because with two parents. So one and a half, I guess.
One and a half generation.
Fractal.
How do you count it?
I'm always about fractals.
So it's kind of a trick question, because what I discovered when I started talking to people for this cohort is that some people consider first generation the first generation that moved here, so what we would call like an arriving citizen or an immigrant, they consider first generation. But like with like Latino culture anyway, typically you're first generation if you were the first generation to be born in the United
States. That's how it is for Polish people too. Okay. So that's why I was always confused, because just like, I'm not first generation. I was not born here. So mm-hmm. I consider myself generation zero.
Yeah.
My daughter is
first
generation.
Yeah. But
that's interesting that different cultures counted differently too.
Well, tell me a little bit about the session that y'all just had with Chris.
I think my favorite thing was prompts that he made us do. He gave us 10 different words that he made us choose to write on the list, switch the list between the participants, and then made us write a scene and use the words from the list. And I think it was a super interesting way to open up creativity for me.
It certainly disrupts the pattern that a person would be used to. By having a list generated by another person based on prompts, and then taking that other person's list of very, I guess, separate nouns, and figuring out how to incorporate.
Yeah, it was really a fun scene writing assignment. I always like prompts where we get to work with each other, get away, like, or collaborate with words. And the other prompt he gave us came from the question, where I come from, and then we had to just fill in the rest, which I think is a very... He has great prompts that are very loaded, and they can go in a lot of different directions. That are just vague enough, but also personal enough to really kind of dig into what you want to dig into. Just the question where I come from. To me, it had it almost involved a discovery for me. That's where I kind of arrive at a conclusion. I describe where I came from, which is here in Oregon, but I've never I don't always feel like I come from here. So I guess I reached a kind of line where I come from is not necessarily where I belong or feel like I belong. But it's interesting that there's that dual aspect of it that I thought was a bit of a discovery, a self-discovery that was good to contemplate.
Where are you from in Oregon?
Corvallis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where OSU is, yeah. And I lived in a university town, but I described a lot about just the people of Oregon that I grew up with and I grew up around. And it's almost like describing a foreign country in a way, even though it's my home. So I don't know.
For me, it was an interesting prompt too. It was interesting to hear you because, like, even though I'm Generation Zero and my home is somewhere else, or I think it is somewhere else, but not necessarily, that we perceive it in a similar way. Like, yeah, where is my home? Where am I from? For me, when I'm here in the United States, I think of home as Poland. That's where I'm from. But then when I went back and I'm just like, well, I don't quite fit there anymore because I've spent half of my life here by now. But then I don't quite fit here either. So it was very interesting to where the writing took me to just explore it a little bit more and think more about, yeah, where is home? Is it the, just like Chris said during the workshop, is it the home? Is it the people? Is it the place where you live? Mm-hmm. It's a interesting things are going to come out of this one.
Rich question. Does your daughter have a relationship with Poland, with like where you're from? Does she think of it as...
So she has connection because we're very active in Polish community. So she has a cultural connection to Poland. She, we put together a Polish festival. She dances at the Polish festival. I do folk, Polish folk dance. We dance together. So she's very involved too. She does not speak Polish very well, but she tries to. We haven't had opportunity to travel to Poland as much as I wanted to, but last time she was there, she liked it. I want her to study there. She's 16 now. And I think she might want to go there. I think she has something that's very typical also for people, and I don't want to speak for people from the what I call the first generation. It's the cross between when she is here, she is too Polish to be considered American, but she, when she is there, she is too American to be Polish. And I've seen it among my friends as kids who are adults now that it's really hard for them, especially when they are teenagers, to like find their identity without within communities.
Which I think is part of why that question of where is home is so interesting to Chris.
Right.
And definitely what I think he's exploring in this show, Our Orange Sky.
But I thought it would be more for younger people who were born here, whose parents were not born here. I did not realize that it's going to be also for us, for people who moved here. And we feel the same way. Like, where is my home? Like, I don't feel fully here because I grew up with different values, different cultures, so I don't completely fit here. But right. Then when I go back, I don't fit there anymore either because I'm Americanized enough as well. Yeah. So that was very interesting for me to discover during these workshops too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's sort of interesting. You're like, I think I gave up having a home. Like, not you. I don't put words in your mouth, right? But
I wrote, remember that six-word thing that we were writing for the previous play? I wrote something, and I don't know if it made it to the wall, but I wrote something that like I would have to check it. But it said something about like that I left one home to build another one somewhere else, and now I have two homes or maybe not at all. And I just, that's how it is. It's two or none. That's how the life of immigrant.
I know one of Chris's sort of goals is to make identities that are not seen often, to just like put them in front of people more. And I wonder whether or not it feels like the stories that are being, you know, put on stage, whether he's telling stories that aren't being told.
I thought American Son did a really, How to Make an American Son?
Yeah, we just call it American Son. Yeah, exactly.
I thought it did a really good job of conveying those ideas of some of what you were just talking about with your daughter, just how do you make an American daughter? How do you make an American son? What does that actually mean? What do you want to pass down from your previous nation and culture? And what do you want to leave behind and say, no, you go forth without that baggage, I guess. And I think those are actually pretty universal themes that a lot of people can relate to. And I think that's why audiences responded strongly to that. And I think when people give these type of stories a chance, they realize that there's that it's reflected in the history of their own families and their own experiences. They might vary demographically, but I think good plays touch upon universal themes like that. And I think Portland theater is getting better as far as thinking about representation of different people. I do see a lot of backlash against that because it's, well, there's a lot of fear about scarcity and financing in the world of theater right now. So I think sometimes whenever there's fear, minority groups kind of get the brunt of that. But at the same time, I think audiences respond to stories that touch their hearts. And I think when people speak authentically from their own experiences, then that's the only time that's allowed to happen.
I mean, I would concur with Ajay that things have been getting better. I still would like to see, I suppose, a greater diversity of voices and specificity of voices in each category, and for there to be continuing growth in, I guess, the courage to be, not perhaps that's not the right word, the removal of limits on being authentic and direct and bold in what we're able to say.
What do you feel like are the limits that need to be, like, what are the barriers to being bold? What are the barriers to being bold, the bold barriers?
Catering to the comfort of majority white mainstream culture audiences, or when what you write has nothing to do with what is expected from the audience or from funders.
What you're saying is reminding me of some of the conversations that happened around Awestruck, where sort of like in Awestruck, there, like, the character of the playwright is like, I feel like in order for me to be allowed to put my stories as an immigrant or first generation on the, or a brown person, like, on the American stage, it has to be about my trauma. I have to, like, prove my humanity. And if I just told the stories that I want to tell, I'm not being Latino enough, or, and so part of the conversation was we had a workshop with Lisa Dring, who is basically saying, like, who are we writing these stories for? Like, who, what are the stories that our community needs when our community is our audience? When y'all think about writing, either for the theater or for whatever, who do you think about as your audience, or do you think about your audience?
Well, for the piece that got presented at Fertile Ground, I wrote that because I was in a place where I needed to make myself laugh. And I still think I am in that position where what I really want to do is to make myself laugh, and hopefully other people will laugh along with me.
Yeah, writing for yourself.
I write from a need to write. It's just something that I need to get out, and I need to say it, and I need to speak because, I don't know, when you write, people can listen a little bit harder. But I don't think about who is, I worry about thinking too hard about how people will react, because I'm fearful of thinking about the gaze of white people, thinking about, well, what about the gaze of straight people? The gaze, G-A-Z-E.
It took me a moment, but then I got there.
like a white gaze or a straight gaze, because I think that has the potential to make a writer filter themselves and thinking about, well, what? Well, I can't air that dirty laundry, or I can't speak to the. To that, I don't want to be in a position where I'm self-censoring. So I want to have the freedom to write what I feel I need to write.
I hope we don't have to censor ourselves when we're writing, because when we censor ourselves, we don't tell the stories that we want to tell. And if we don't tell the stories we want to tell, people are not going to hear. They're going to be somewhere in the shade of other stories that maybe are not as important.
Yeah, and also to kind of be directed by what other people think of our experiences should be, or what our experience, like what you were saying about, well, a Latino story has to be on the border, or a story from this culture has to be about that, or this particular war, or this particular situation. When there's, you know, when we can be just as diverse in tone and in style, and in what we choose to speak on and speak about. So it's also a little bit challenging too to get feedback and reception from a wider mainstream public that has to accept our voices as authentically coming from ourselves and not what they perceive what we are, right? So that's why cohorts like this are so great, because we can get feedback and give feedback to each other with our own different and unique perspectives.
To what extent have y'all discovered anything that feels really like a common thread through, I mean, because the cohort is extremely diverse, really. It's like people from all backgrounds, some people who were born here, you know, all different ethnicities. Is there anything that feels like also a very clear common thread?
I was really surprised how similar we are to each other with our experiences and our feelings, because it comes in our writings. Like when we read what we wrote with the prompts, the things that RJ wrote today were just like similar to what the thoughts were similar to what I had, maybe in different order. The writing is different, but the thoughts are similar. And that was something that for me just came through the whole cohort, the whole program. It was very surprising because we are all from very different backgrounds, from very different parts of the world, I could say. And yet there are some basic feelings, basic emotions that are universal to all of us.
I would agree that, common themes emerge, universal themes about similar experiences. I keep coming back to the ideas of just kind of being in between two worlds. But that's kind of it's almost a trope in a lot of stories and in every story, because a lot of stories are about kind of the outsider perspective. Because I think an outsider perspective is kind of has a unique way of seeing the world, where they're able to kind of have a little bit of distance, yet a little bit of connection, so that they can pinpoint things that might not be so obvious if you're immersed in it, or if you're completely separate from it. These kind of hinterlands, these limbos, these Gloria Andalusia called borderlands, that those type of themes kind of reemerge to me, especially in this cohort.
Do any of you have like a moment, it doesn't have to be theater, but in popular culture, TV, movies, whatever, where you have a memory of distinctly feeling like you saw yourself for the first time, or saw yourself that you had not, a version of yourself that you had not seen? My classic example is, not to out myself on the radio, but the Ring of Keys song in Fun Home, where the main character talks about like being a child, like a young girl, and seeing her first like butch masculine presenting lesbian or presumably lesbian, you know, and I think she worked at like a hardware store or something. It had like a massive ring of keys. And she just like sings this song about like seeing this woman be like, oh my God, masculine, like masculine presenting women exist. And I was like suddenly like in the theater, like naked and being like my straight friend. I am experiencing something that my straight friend sitting next to me don't know what it's like. And that was a weird experience.
So I headed in this play when the mom says the monologue. That's why I love that monologue so much. So
in our Orange Sky?
Yes.
But same.
This is in our Orange Sky. In Our Orange Sky, when mom says the monologue in Spanish, which I don't speak Spanish at all, I have no clue what she was saying, but I saw myself in her because I know what she was saying without understanding what she was saying. And I think this was the first time for me, aside from me being white and straight and growing up in Poland and always seeing myself in just regular TV on an everyday basis. But here in the United States, I think this was the first time. And I felt naked too.
That's strange. Yeah.
The first time that I saw a piece of media and went, this is for me, was when I saw The Theory of Everything at East West Players, and that is a play by Prince Gomovilas. It is not about Stephen Hawking. It's about a Pan-Asian group of friends in Las Vegas who gather on a rooftop to wait for space aliens to come. And there's a monologue in the play where one of the characters talks about how she's working so hard to get to know about space aliens and how she wants to be abducted by space aliens to meet the space aliens. And I mean, not that I really want to meet space aliens, but that was the first time that I saw a play and I went, oh, somebody gets me.
Have you always been into space aliens?
I think it started with being a fan of The X-Files.
Ah, well, yes. Hard to argue with that.
I want to believe.
So are you watching Sex Education?
Not presently.
But, like, do you know that show?
Heard of it.
Oh, because Gillian Anderson is on that show, but also there's, like, a character who is, like, always writing about space aliens and, like, kind of, like, sexy space alien stories. Sexy science fiction. Space aliens. It's a good show.
Sounds good.
It's on my list to watch.
It's such a good show. I didn't start it yet. Yeah.
Sexy. That makes me think about kind of Stranger in a Strange Land type stories. I don't know why the cartoon Invader Zim comes to mind. Because to me, I was really struggling to think of a specific example where I'm just like, oh yeah, this speaks directly to me. Because I'm always like trying to me, theater is about like, what is the audience experiencing? And when I'm an audience member, I try to empathize with everything that's happening on stage. But a lot of the media, it's kind of coded in a way, right? Like how things are queer coded sometimes. And you just kind of be like, okay, I can project myself into that scenario. That's not exactly the same, but I can take elements of that and relate to it. And that's why I come back to the analogy of space aliens, being from a different world, from another world, because to me those type of stories are kind of coding for an immigrant experience or for a child of an immigrant experience, where you're just kind of you're experiencing a culture that is alien to you and foreign to you, even if it is your own.
Well, let's leave it there. Thank you all for showing up. I hope the snacks were adequate. Yeah. Our Orange Sky by Christopher Oscar Pena opens Saturday, June 8th, and runs through Sunday, June 16th, with previews starting Thursday, June 6th. This Thursday is also our Pride Affinity Night, where members of the LGBTQIA
Plus community can book a $5 ticket and enjoy a pre-show reception with complimentary snacks, wine, and an entry for a raffle prize. And then we do the same thing the following Thursday, but for our BIPOC community members. Go to profiletheater.org for those promo codes or to get tickets to any of our performances, and we hope to see you at the theater.